Hey learners, this is Jillian
and Kelly.
Welcome to the Learners Inspired Podcast. Thank you for joining us on episode 9. Today we will be defining and discussing strategies for differentiation, individualization, and personalization, and how technology can support these learning experiences. Okay, Kelly, this is another exciting episode, and this episode is a little bit of a hot topic. So today we're talking a lot about personalization and the instructional strategies that kind of lead up to achieving those experiences. And I am super excited to have a special guest with us. Can you tell us who is here with us today?
Well, I'm excited because it's actually one of my campus principals, one of the campuses I get to visit each and every week, and I have the privilege of working with him. And this is Dr. Sandy Conklin. Can you introduce yourself for us?
Yes, good morning. As Kelly said, I'm Dr. Conklin, and I've been a principal here at Beck Elementary for 6 years. This is my 11th year serving as a principal in Northwest ISD and 21st year in education. So I'm excited to be joining y'all this morning.
Man, and Dr. Conklin, you kind of have a special place in my heart. You were actually the man that decided to take a risk on me and hire me to be one of your campus teachers.
Yay! And then we snatched her up!
Yeah. It wasn't much of a risk, I will say that. You impressed me a lot in our interview, and unfortunately, like Kelly just said, we only got to experience the greatness of Jillian for 1 year, but we're excited to still be able to partner with you.
I know. I love getting to come back to Beck, and I especially love getting to have you featured on Kelly and I's podcast.
I still remember, just sidetrack going back to that, when you were going through the interview process, and I guess Sandy had already received the call that we were interested in hiring you, and I saw him in the hallway, and I'm like, how's it going? And he goes, you should know. And I was like, oh no, I guess you got the call.
And Jillian has gotten the evil eye for me for about a year, so I'm at the point where I'm starting to get over it a little bit, but.
Yeah. That's awesome.
He knows he's still truly needed for expertise and advice, and so,
yes. So we are excited to just have a really good, open conversation about our hot topics today, and let's dive in.
Okay, Kelly, so let's just kind of start from the foundation. Oftentimes when district leaders or school leaders or even our teacher leaders are thinking about doing things in the best interest of students, oftentimes they start using one of our favorite education buzzwords, personalized learning.
Yes.
And so really our goal today is to kind of back up, talk about some misconceptions around that buzzword, personalized learning, and kind of why people are choosing to start implementing personalized learning into their districts and schools, and then really get Dr. Conklin's expertise and advice and him sharing the journey that they've gone on through really focusing on differentiation. So let's look at a resource from learningpersonalized.com that kind of shares that why behind personalized learning.
So I discovered this resource on Twitter. I love Twitter as a great place to kind of just collect resources and share them back out with teachers and just to kind of dig deeper into topics that I know my campuses are diving deeper into. But this particular blog was all about just the statements that people are using to describe their experiences with personalized learning or their why behind kind of implementing that into their, mm-hmm. their culture of their classrooms and their schools. It's a list, and we'll link this in the show notes, but it's a list of quotes from educators on why they believe that personalized learning is best for kids and best for their instruction. But what I loved about it is, and she, Allison Zmuda talks about it in her blog, but she says, as the list scrolls, the reoccurring themes that you see from all of these educators mm-hmm. that kind of chimed in were that the experiences they were providing kids through personalized learning, you could see respect, that students were the center of all of that, that they were providing access and empowerment for their learners, and that there was relevance in all of the tasks that were created in that process. And so she says, at the core, we want to design learning that matters to the discipline, matters to growth, and matters to the student. So I think that as long as that's kind of our focus, mm-hmm. then we can't help but know we're doing what's best for kids.
Yeah, absolutely. I totally agree with that. So definitely I would encourage listeners to check out that resource and use that as a reason to develop your why. But Dr. Conklin, in this next segment, we would love to hear from you about the journey your campus has gone on and kind of where you're at right now. Okay, so kind of the first stop when you're looking at truly trying to personalize learning is backing up and kind of looking at a continuum of things that need to happen before you can truly reach a personalized learning experience. And Sandy, that's kind of where your campus started this year. The end goal obviously is to create personalized learning experiences for our students because it's good for them. But as a campus, you guys really felt like it was important for you to back up, look at differentiation, and kind of establish what that means as a campus. Can you tell us a little bit kind of about your journey and how you attacked this goal?
Yeah, so a couple years ago, we were working a lot with the rigor and relevance rubrics and really trying to get better at creating those engaging and thoughtful lessons using that academic language. And we were struggling really to kind of get in that well-developed area on that rubric. And so as we had more conversations with our teachers about how to get there, some of the language and descriptors in that rubric really kind of forced us into having those conversations about having different learning experiences for students. So we really felt like differentiation was our next step if we really wanted to get there, that we had to think more about what we had to do for individual kids and what their needs were. So that led us down that path of selecting differentiation as our campus problem of practice. Mm-hmm. And we determined moving forward that we were all committed to that.
Yeah.
But as we started to have conversations with team leaders and teachers, we found that we all had differing opinions about what differentiation was.
Well, and honestly, differentiation is a buzzword. It's used across the district, and it's probably used 100,000 different ways.
Yeah, so. I remember as a pre-service educator, that being so important, you had to have all of your elements for differentiation aligned and, outlined in your lesson plan that you submitted for a grade. But, looking back on it, I'm not sure that I really knew what I was doing. Yeah.
There's a lot of, misconceptions, and we wanted to really debunk some of those myths about what differentiation was. You know, like you said, Jillian, some of us thought like differentiation was as simple as small group instruction or, something like that. And in fact, that's not. It's what you're doing in small group instruction that matters. That's what actually is differentiation. So that's just one example of a myth that we really had to kind of debunk so that we can move forward and all kind of moving in that same direction if we're really going to accomplish that and move towards that personalized learning. So we started with defining that at each of the grade levels. In a PLC, and then we took all those definitions and we kind of built one together. So as a campus, we really felt that differentiation was that process for identifying students' needs, their abilities, their interests, and then being very intentional on planning specific pathways to get students to master that standard, whether it's through content, process, or products. But mastery of that objective was important.
Yeah. I love that, and I feel like your teachers aren't throwing out the work that they've done with the rigor and relevance rubrics, that is still very much an important part of how you're deciding on what happens at each of those differentiated parts.
And I love that you used in your definition pathways, because I think that is easy for anyone that hears that definition to understand that, okay, it's not just my guided reading groups where I meet with these different groups and, I did small group instruction, so I differentiated. But the path that you're sending each of those kids on, that's all focused on that same learning standard and just whatever path is best for that kid, that student, to take. I just love the pathway word. I feel like it solidifies it a little bit more.
Yeah.
Yeah, we selected pathway too because, there's an emphasis on same learning objective, the content, the standards. It's not about students just doing different things, random different things. It's still very purposeful.
Right.
That we're working towards mastery of a specific skill or a specific concept.
Mm-hmm. So you both have this awesome resource that you are going to share with us today. It's a book that you have referred to as your Bible for personalized learning. And I think that we need to reference that in our episode as often as we can and maybe direct people to that. So, Jillian, do you want to kind of share the good stuff about differentiation from the book?
Yeah. Well, you know, one reason why I have referenced this book is because something unique here in Northwest ISD is that oftentimes our campuses come together when they have like problem of practices to develop a learning team. And so Beck and Lakeview are on a learning team that is really focusing on kind of this overarching goal of personalized experiences, mm-hmm. and each campus is kind of attacking it a little differently. And so two of the campuses that I also serve, Cox and Roanoke, are also a part of your learning team, and that's kind of why I've had to do some homework so that I'm supporting those teachers effectively. And so there is a chart in this book that Sandy and I both said, like, this is super helpful when trying to clear up those misconceptions on what is the difference between differentiation, individualization, and personalization. And I feel like it's what the teacher is doing versus what the student mm-hmm. is doing. So when you look in that column, there are two rows that talk about differentiation, and it talks about that the teacher is providing instruction to a group of learners and adjusting the learning needs for the group of learners.
So it's very teacher-driven at mm-hmm. the differentiation level. And I think that, too, that the other myth that I hear is that it's just so much more work. How do you kind of approach that when a teacher says, but this is a lot of work to create that many different...
Well, I want to address what you said a minute ago, because you're correct. Differentiation is teacher-driven as far as planning.
Right.
As far as the planning goes.
Yes.
But it is still very student-driven as far as the learning experiences that are planned for students. And mm-hmm. and so that's why that's a great start for teachers to really get going on that path to personalized learning. So what was your other question? I'm sorry.
Just the workload that maybe the differentiation
absolutely.
Buzzword kind of brings with it.
Yeah. Obviously there's, there comes a little bit of anxiety when you talk about, I'm going to differentiate for all 22
all
learners in my classroom. And really, I don't think any of these elements require that completely, like an expectation that you're 22 different lessons, 22 different pathways. But we have had conversations in after going on this journey for almost a year now, mm-hmm. what my teachers have really found out was that it is more planning on the front end, mm-hmm. but if you're planning for differentiation and you're meeting those student needs and mm-hmm. you're planning for that range of where they're at, that readiness level, there's a lot less work on the back end as far as remediation and reteaching and because
good.
Yeah,
good.
So you, it's kind of a trade-off. I mean, it's still the same amount of work. It's just, when do you want to do the work? Do you want to do it up front and really make sure that first teach or that first experience is authentic, it's relevant, it's challenging, and it's engaging for students? Or do you want to do that work at the back end and do a lot of reteaching?
And you're trying to win them back over.
Absolutely.
I feel like that success initially is the momentum that you want to keep going with.
Absolutely.
So I feel like that kind of leads into you talking about your success criteria. Are we there yet, do you think?
Sure.
After your campus defined differentiation together, then you kind of had to determine, how do you know that you're doing it, that you're rolling it out in your classrooms with fidelity? So can you speak about your success criteria?
Yeah, so once we defined it, you know, we can define differentiation all we want, and those are, it's a great way to start, but they're just words on a paper if we don't mm-hmm. know how to actually put those words into action. So
exactly.
Ms. Bunch and I sat down and we created what we called our differentiation implementation success criteria. And really our thinking behind it was, how can we provide a guide for teachers, you know, as they're planning these lessons, the important points to think about, very much like the rigor and relevance rubrics, where mm-hmm. we can really use that as a planning document. That was our thinking behind this success criteria. So we just talked about what would differentiation would look like if it was implemented at the advanced level, the proficient level, and kind of that beginning level. And in each of those are just certain descriptors about, you know, what strategies might we use, what the tasks might look like. So, and we put active links in that success criteria, such as tiered tasks, compacting, depth and complexity, the strategies that we really wanted to focus on. There are obviously a number of strategies in differentiation, but we've decided to focus on tiered task, student choice and voice, depth and complexity, and compacting. And we felt like if we could start there, we would give our teachers some strong strategies to make them feel more comfortable. So that's where we started.
And Dr. Conklin has agreed to let us share this document with everyone listening in case you want to kind of look at the way that they've designed these different levels of performance for differentiation on their campus. And I feel like that it's such a valuable resource and just a way to kind of measure your growth in the process, because it really is, I think, as the teacher, you're learning through this this lesson design just what ways you can grow that experience in your classroom. So,
and I just really love that your campus has put in the work to define that success criteria, because oftentimes educators, you know, we're given the charge to create these experiences for our students, but oftentimes it's inconsistent on how we, you know, attack achieving that goal. And so that really helps prevent any kind of misconceptions and really creates uniformity across the campus in what you're seeing across grade levels and what's happening to really help achieve and meet your problem of practice.
Yeah, and the one thing that we made sure, the message that we tried to convey, Ms. Bunch and I, is that, you know, we're all learners on this journey.
Yes.
That Ms. Bunch and I, you know, we did not go into this as experts of differentiation. We've learned right alongside our teachers, and that we were going to put in the work with them as well. So, I mean, as far as, like I said, defining it, we were actively part of that. We've been actively part of helping teachers design tiered tasks and talk with them about compacting, have those conversations. So it allowed us, where we were very vulnerable about what we know and do not know about. All of us were very honest and transparent. And we felt like that's really the only way we can learn. If I tried to go in there, or Ms. Bunch or anyone tried to go in there and say, we know everything about differentiation, and then we really didn't, then I don't think we were going to make a lot of progress. But since we all came in as learners, and we understood that along this journey there were going to be mistakes made, and that's okay, that we were going to take risks and we were going to learn and grow together, we were going to make some progress. So I just have been very, very pleased with our teachers' willingness to just jump out there and try things and without a fear of, like, failing or,
you know. And I feel like I can say I witnessed that every single time I'm on this campus. There's always just something different happening. Like, it's just, it's amazing to see the opportunities that are being, you know, the experiences that are being created for students in these classrooms, because it, I feel like your kids are rising to the expectation. Like, we think, oh, I don't know, can my kids do this? Like, but they rise up and they're just performing. And I feel like also the kind of backtracking a little bit, I feel like this is also a perfect opportunity to express the importance of utilizing Jillian and I too on your campus to facilitate this differentiation process, because many of our teachers here especially are using Seesaw, they're using Google Classroom, they're creating these tasks for their students, and then that those platforms are providing that access to and making that process a little bit easier. So where it is one of those things where I have all these different tasks, I don't know exactly how I'm going to push them out to my kids, pushing them out through those digital components can kind of ease that transition into that differentiated classroom.
Yeah, it truly can. And I'm so glad that you kind of segued into that, because I was sitting here thinking, like, okay, I'm going to ask her, how have you supported this campus with achieving their goals with differentiation? And girl, you shared
I feel
it.
Like a lot of it too is kinder, first and second especially, they've really jumped on board with Seesaw and Google Classroom. So I feel like primarily, especially in those primary classrooms, Chromebooks are new. I feel like that there's even just more to come in that regard, because with the life cycle units in first and kindergarten, like, we got more and more teachers involved with Google Classroom and just utilizing that as a platform to push lessons out. And while it was just those initial interactive slides to go with science, it's opened the door to, Google Classroom can do this. Like, it's just started that conversation that I think is going to be powerful.
I think utilizing your campus support teachers, just absolutely. That human capital that you have on your campus mm-hmm. is critical to success when you have any type of initiative. And we're fortunate here that we have awesome people in those positions. Mm-hmm. Obviously, Kelly done an amazing job, and Jillian has done an amazing job. And but also our GT teachers have jumped mm-hmm. right in there. They've yes. presented. They've uh-huh. helped us present on tiered tasks. They've helped us present on compacting. They've gone into PLCs and helped plan with teachers.
Yes.
Our media specialist librarian, Jenny Martin, is an instructional like genius. Yes. And so she's always willing to go in, and she's planned. Our PE teachers, our fine arts teachers, they're thinking about how they can tier tasks, how they can differentiate, yes. how they awesome. Can use depth and complexity. So this has truly been a campus-wide effort, and everybody involved in this campus feels like they have a sense of ownership to that. And so they are working really hard to design those experiences for their students, but they know that they have each other to lean on mm-hmm. to get there.
That's so awesome.
That's awesome. Okay, so another stop on our continuum for achieving personalized learning experiences, sometimes individualization can also get can cause some misconceptions with educators feeling like they're truly personalizing learning, but they're not quite there yet. So we just wanted to touch briefly on kind of defining what individualization is for students. And again, this is where the teacher is doing the work on the back end with the lesson design, where they're providing instruction to an individual learner that's accommodating learner needs. So, again, it's not really the students co-constructing that experience. It's still very much on the educator to outline that path for them, but not quite there yet for that true personalization piece. Anything that you would add to that, Dr. Conklin?
Yeah, I just think when we're talking about individualization, it's important to note that it's important. I mean, it's based on that student actually needs the support of that teacher mm-hmm. in order to learn. So they understand that the individual learner is dependent upon him or her in order for them to kind of make progress towards that goal.
Awesome.
Okay, so we finally made it to the personalization stop, where we really get to define what personalized learning is. And really, I'm pulling this language from a super helpful book. Kelly referred to it as the Bible of Personalized Learning. Here we go. But it's a book titled When They Already Know It. And so there's a chart on page 31 that has really broken this down for us. Differentiation, which we talked about, Dr. Conklin, and that being his instructional focus. We just talked briefly on individualization, and then now we're ready to kind of dive in a little deeper to personalization. And that's where we really get to see what the learner is doing to drive his or her own learning. And what makes this personalization so powerful is that the learner is, you know, co-constructing these experiences with the teacher, and it's really connected to the learner's interests, talents, passions, and aspirations. So, Sandy, as you guys start looking toward long-term goals as a campus, where do you feel like your next, just, you know, your next right steps are going to be for your campus to achieve a personalized learning outcome?
Yeah, so I've already had conversations with my leadership team and with Ms. Bunch, and we've really decided that next year our instructional focus is going to be very similar. Mm-hmm. I feel like we've made a lot of momentum towards differentiation, and like I said in the beginning, we really have changed people's belief about differentiation, so everybody is all in and on board, mm-hmm. so we're going to continue learning more about that, but we really would like to add some elements of personalization, since that's really our long-term goal, is we get to a place where students are really owning their learning, they're responsible for mm-hmm. their learning, they become experts of their own learning, mm-hmm. and they're driving their goals. You know, they know what they need to do to master the standards and expectations that we're putting forth. And so that's really our long-term goal. So we're excited about the progress we've made, but we know we have so much work to do. Mm-hmm. And for us, it doesn't make any sense to change directions. And we're not experts at differentiation, so we really need to be more comfortable with that, because we do want it to be more routine mm-hmm. and just something that comes natural to us as educators and as teachers on this campus. And that happens through practice.
Yeah.
So we're really going to stay focused on differentiation while adding some of those personalized elements we're students are co-constructing their learning. They're coming up with their own goals. They're coming up with their own pathways to achieve that. And that's really the direction that we're going to be moving towards.
Listening to you defining it and then you kind of talking through it, I just had this thought, like, how cool would it be to have kind of like a video of that to show what that co-construction looks like between a student and a teacher? I think that if we ever got to that point where it was just happening, like, and it was just solid, man, that would be such a powerful learning tool for others to say, like, this is how I bring that student into that process, and then how that personalized learning evolves
for each learner. It makes me wonder if there could be one of your, like, your lead participants on the campus thinking about, like, their action research project, you know, like, how cool would that be?
I would love just to be a fly on the wall.
That's a good idea. I mean, because there are some, you know, I think there are some teachers on our campus who have stepped up as leaders in this kind of work. And I think there are students who absolutely are willing, capable.
You have students who can totally express exactly
what they want to learn and how they will do it,
what pathway is best for them. Like, they could totally put that into words.
We know, like, we have tons of videos out there on, like, how to run a high-functioning PLC, right?
Or student-led conferences.
Or how to do a guided reading group effectively. Yes. But this is one of those things that could definitely be a trailblazer.
And I think it just, you benefit from seeing somebody else do it. Even if you're in the room live watching it, like, it's just a kind of mega lab type experience or a video of someone that you know that's doing it. And it with it being one of your own peers, there's something empowering about that to say, my teacher right next door is doing this on the regular. Like, I want to know how this is happening.
And allowing students to take that type of ownership in their learning is a game changer. I mean, think about if all of our students had that opportunity, how involved they would feel, how they would really own their learning, how they would be excited to come to school. Yeah. I mean, that's transformational.
Yeah.
You start talking about students sitting down and really designing their learning experiences with their teachers. That's pretty awesome to think about, like, where we are going, and once we get there, that's going to be pretty cool. Yeah.
I love that is the long-term vision, because I feel like just the work that you're doing leading up to that, it's just going to pay off.
It makes me so excited. Like, I can't help but sometimes just put on the, like, parent hat and think about, like,
I want
teaching
that
and
my kids.
Learning and, you know, public school systems who are doing work, like what's happening here at Beck, makes it super exciting, you know, and inspiring for my kid to have those type of experiences.
Yep.
Well, that's why we talked a lot about, like, this learning over differentiation is not a destination. It's not like we're going to wake up one morning and we're going to be experts at differentiation and then we're done. It's a journey, because as then we move towards that personalized learning, how exciting that's going to be and how much learning that's going to be required by all of us. And then, okay, what's next after that?
You know,
are we going to continue to support our learners? Because our learners are going to change every year.
Yes.
And like you said, thinking about your own kids, my son's going to start kindergarten next year, and I am just so excited and thrilled that I know what types of experiences he's going to have here at Beck.
Yeah,
and
absolutely.
That's pretty amazing. And I wouldn't want anything less for any other child.
Yeah.
Right.
Absolutely.
So I can't help but think, too, just the journey, because it has been, you know, like you said, a year plus, if you think back to the initial implementation of the rigor and relevance rubrics. Mm-hmm. But with new staff coming in, what kind of support? Because I think that in my PLCs even, I have people say, oh, but that's at Beck. Like, you have a really good reputation of just solid teachers, good instructional practices. Hiring somebody in to join your team, you're looking for specific things.
Their knowledge.
Profile. So can you share what it is that maybe, not divulging all your secrets for someone wanting a job. But what are your look fors, and then how do you plan to support those new educators to bring them up to speed with where you guys are right now?
Yeah. Well, I appreciate all the things you said about Beck and our teachers, because I do think that's the most important thing that I do is hire, you know, the right staff.
Yeah.
I want to put the right teacher in each classroom. So that is a long process, but an important process. So obviously during the interview, I have questions framed around differentiation and how that might look. I'm really trying to understand their mindset on differentiation, mm-hmm. what they feel like their responsibility is to meeting the individual needs of students. Mm-hmm. And so there are questions designed to kind of get that out of them, because I'm looking for teachers who are open to that, yes. who are not one-size-fits-all, mm-hmm. You know, kind of teachers.
Yeah.
So it starts there. Once we get them and we start onboarding them to Beck, there is a lot that we want them to understand about mm-hmm. what it means to be a teacher at Beck. So in the new teacher academy, I know that they get a lot of great information from our curriculum coordinators, but once we have them here for that day before teachers come back, we'll talk about differentiation, we'll mm-hmm. share some of the strategies that we've shared with our staff. But a big piece of that is making sure that I really give them a great mentor. You know, someone that's going to be working alongside with them that can help coach them along the way. Because mm-hmm. obviously, you can't give them a year's worth of training in one day. But right. it's introducing those kind of concepts to them, then allowing them to have others that they can go to, classrooms that they can observe in, mm-hmm. People to come and observe them and give them feedback. Mm-hmm. We will make sure that they have access to all that. And then, of course, making sure they understand the importance of, again, reaching out to the support staff here.
Yeah.
Our GT right. teachers, our instructional technology coaches, mm-hmm. our librarian, all those things have yeah. to be available to them, but they have to know that and feel, we've got to get them to a place where they feel comfortable going there.
Absolutely.
So it's yeah. through a lot of coaching and mentoring, basically.
Yeah. Awesome. I love that. So exciting. Okay, Kelly, so we have talked a lot about differentiation, individualization, and personalization. And so we know that tons of awesome learning experiences are happening in classrooms here at Beck. And one way that teachers are able to kind of showcase with families and an outside audience the things that they're doing is through their e-portfolio. So really, that's just an awesome place for them to share what they're doing in the classrooms and for kids to reflect and explain how the learning experience has impacted them.
I think that we've just come such a long way with the e-portfolio process, and so it just seems natural that we talk about it today with this as well, because if an e-portfolio is truly being utilized the way that I think our district envisions them to be utilized, then on that e-portfolio, as a learner, that child, the whole child, would be showcased. Mm-hmm. So we've talked already about some resources from the Learning Personalized site, but there's another one that we're going to link that references student portfolio models. So really good examples of what an e-portfolio that is showcasing the tasks that a student has created, the student-centered tasks, the goals that student might be setting for themselves as a learner. It just really is a great resource to look at some model e-portfolios. But
I'm so excited for you to share about this part.
Well, and I don't know that I have like a clear-cut thing that I want to share, like one thing I can pinpoint, but I think that at the core, just learning to utilize that e-portfolio as a place to showcase that learner as an individual.
Mm-hmm.
So truly a place where, you know, those personalized learning opportunities are happening. If the student is a co-creator in that process and mm-hmm. then getting to reflect back on that learning experience and share that on their e-portfolio with an authentic audience, like there are so many powerful things that can happen yeah. right there.
And that's what both of you mentioned, in the reflection piece. And I think that's probably the most important. Showcasing your work is fantastic.
Yeah.
But if you're not reflecting on it,
that's a key.
As a learner,
yeah,
that is key. And the part about the e-portfolio that I like is that as you ask students to select it, and you naturally have that reflection, because they're going to want to showcase, you know, that work that they're really proud mm-hmm. of.
Yes.
And then they start to understand kind of their patterns as a learner and what, you know, what they're really good at. So
right.
I like the reflection piece of your portfolio.
Well, and I'm so glad you said that. We could just kind of have a little mini planning meeting for next year, but I feel like that's just a natural next step for us here at Beck. Like mm-hmm. thinking about how hard y'all have worked to get everybody an e-portfolio, whether it be in Seesaw or Google Sites, they're all linked to report cards.
Mm-hmm.
So we're there, but now it's like, let's move them to the next step. And
yes.
I think that natural next step is students selecting the work mm-hmm. that they are just so proud of. Whether that be on an annual, like once in 9 weeks, we stop and we do this, and I want you to share your idea.
Oh, the stop, drop, and e-port?
But just providing that intentional time for reflection and knowing that the e-portfolio process is a district initiative, like that just seems like a good natural place to provide that.
And
space.
That's such a part of one of your morning mindset meetings.
Just this
right?
morning, there was the topic was on reflection.
It's one of our, it's one of our learner qualities.
Yeah.
You know, as a learner, we reflect.
So it's happening, but like, just having that dedicated space where it is happening routinely, I think is a good next step for our e-portfolio process.
So exciting.
But share really quick, stop, drop, and e-port, because you mentioned it, but like tell what it is. It's so good.
I mean, we know that as human beings, like we sometimes have to have intentional reminders to help us develop that habit. And so I'm super excited that all of my campuses this year have taken that step to add e-portfolio links to report cards. And implementing them with fidelity, as you guys know, is challenging, and finding the time and the space to create that importance in our classrooms. And so just that intentional reminder that happens either a week or a couple weeks before report cards go home, just a devoted amount of time where educators are working on their educator e-portfolio, or facilitating students through adding that work to their student e-portfolio. Gates teachers are walking around and helping add work, and campus library and media specialist and myself, you know, we're there present and ready to help step in and support that process. So
dedicated time to it.
Yeah, really it's just about dedicating the time and that consistent reminder, like, hey, this is important to our campus, our culture, our kids. This is the way for them to share their voice. So
that's awesome.
Yeah. Okay, so the time has come for our Twitter shout out. Okay, Kelly, who has earned our Twitter shout out this week?
Well, we kind of went a different direction, and we don't have an exact tweet that we want to point you back to. Instead, we want to grow your PLN, your professional learning network. We want to give you some people on Twitter who are very active and designing tasks within their classrooms for their students to experience that differentiation at Beck especially. So we have chosen to highlight Molly Hornsby, who is a second grade teacher at Beck, and Maddie Polk, who is a kindergarten teacher at Beck. And they are both constantly, they're active on Twitter, they're constantly sharing opportunities that they've created with their learners, and they're sharing templates in a lot of places. Maddie, I know, is sharing things that she's created with teachers over at Lakeview that I'm also in conversation with. Just the power of Twitter and that learning together that takes place. And then we also want to encourage you to follow Dr. Sandy Conklin, because he, as well, is very active. He almost always replies back to his teachers with something encouraging, and he retweets often, so if you're not following one of his teachers, if you're following him, it's likely that you're going to see something good come through, because he's got an eye on all of his teachers here too. So those are our Twitter shout outs today. Go ahead, look them up. We'll link them in the show notes so that you can follow them now. Okay, so we've reached the end of our episode. It's been such a great learning opportunity for me. I know I've already given myself a task list of things that I'm going to follow up on and look at, especially the book. I need to get my hands on a copy of the book.
Or you could just kind of borrow it from
that is so true. I have a couple of friends. So our Operation Inspired today, kind of your homework, so to speak, for our episode is, for sure you need to, if you have not, visit our Google site that we house all of our show notes on. I believe it's tinyurl.com/learnersinspired. Like, we couldn't have made it any easier.
So original.
It's linked on our Twitter page as well. So, and I believe in our anchor profile. So you can find us in a couple of different places. But anytime we mention a blog, a book,
a website,
anything, it's all hyperlinked, ready to go. Dr. Conklin's success criteria will be linked there. Any resources that we have that we can share, we will link them there. So check out the resources that we mentioned. Grab a copy, like I'm going to do, of the When They Already Know It book, so that you can really get a firm grasp on just deciphering differentiation from individualization, personalized learning, personalization. So I know that's,
yeah, it like can I get said, it can get confusing. Like even this morning when I was straightening my hair, I had to call one of my experts on speakerphone and like, I'm recording this podcast this morning and I just want to make sure I don't say anything I shouldn't, you know, like I want to make sure that I'm staying aligned to what it means. So having resources like that book, it's super handy.
And then Dr. Conklin mentioned this a couple of times in his just conversation with us earlier, but definitely take advantage of the human, and I'm doing quotes, the human resources that are on your campuses, because he mentioned the library media specialists, the Gates teachers, your STAR teachers, yes. Your instructional technologists, your curriculum coordinators and coaches. All of those support systems are in place on your campus, and those coaches, those people are waiting and ready to partner with you. So if you haven't established a working relationship with those people on your campus, it's May. So I would encourage you to reach out, find out who they are, and get in touch with them so that you can start next year with utilizing them in every capacity.
Absolutely.
It's a missed opportunity, I think, if we're not utilizing those contacts. And then Dr. Conklin has also said, if you have any questions about maybe the journey, the story of Beck Elementary, kind of how they've, the process to equipping for differentiation on their campus, then he is welcome, you're welcome, to reach out to him through email or Twitter and just pick his brain, because he's got a wealth of information to share. So do you have any would you say anything, I guess, Operation Inspired wise, like charges for our listeners?
I would say that probably over the course of the 11 years, this is the instructional focus that has meant the most to us.
Yes.
That has felt like we're doing the right thing for kids.
Awesome.
And so, I would encourage anybody who's thinking about that to take that risk and just try something,
Start.
And absolutely, utilize your resources. That's critical to your success. Remember, it takes a village. And contact me if you have any questions. I'm not an expert, but I will certainly talk through anything with you if you need some advice.
So before we go, you mentioned presenting this summer.
Yes.
Can you share a little bit about where you're presenting and what you're presenting on?
Yeah, we're going to present on differentiation and kind of sharing the story and maybe talk a little more specifically about some of the strategies that we've used at the Visioning Conference on June 20th. And then I'll be talking a little bit about differentiation with the use of depth and complexity icons at the TEPSA conference in Austin.
That's awesome. So cool.
I'm definitely checking out your visioning presentation. Hopefully we're not scheduled at the same time. So
yeah, because I want to come to yours as well.
Which you've been a huge help in helping Jeremy and I design that presentation. So when we say this guy is a wealth of knowledge, he really is.
So awesome. We have reached the end of our episode for today, and we are so excited about just the wealth of knowledge I feel we've been equipped with to kind of go forward with. So with that being said, this is Kelly
and Jillian
and Sandy
signing off for episode 9. Learners, remember,
you are an innovator,
and you never know who you will inspire.